We're visiting today with Trinidad Sanchez Jr., poet and performer and author. Trinidad Sanchez is a native of Pontiac, Michigan, and he's one of 10 children born to a poet father, Trinidad V. Sanchez and Sophia Sanchez. Thank you very much for agreeing to visit with us today.
Well, thank you, Deanna, for having me.
Okay. You're currently of Denver, Colorado, and I understand that you may be moving on from Denver back to Michigan, maybe?
Well, no, we're probably, the winters here have sort of gotten a little bit colder, so we'll probably return to San Antonio if we return any place.
Oh, okay. Well, San Antonio is nice, too. It's not Pontiac, but...
It's a great city. That's right.
That's right. Now, I want to get into a little bit of your family history, if I may. All of your family is from Michigan, is that correct?
Well, my mother was from Monterrey, and my father was from Piedras Negras, Coahuila. They came and lived in San Antonio. The three oldest siblings were born in San Antonio. My sister, I believe, was born in College Station, Texas. And then my father took a train to Michigan, took a train north, and he ended up in Pontiac, Michigan. And the rest of us, there's, so the other seven children were born in Pontiac. Born and raised in Pontiac.
Now, your dad went up to Michigan for auto factory, agriculture?
He went up looking for work. I mean, so many immigrants did at that time at the turn of the century, around the 1910. And he left... I suppose, looking for work, looking for a better life. He ended up in Pontiac, and his younger brother, my brother Furman, ended up in Chicago for a while. Well, he and my aunt Odila then ended up in Detroit, and the rest of his family stayed in Piedras Negras.
I see. Now, in the home, growing up, what was the language that was spoken?
In La Casa, we spoke Spanish, and my first language was Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
My mom and dad, my dad eventually worked in the auto factory for a while. Then I suppose when he was around 40, he opened up a little pool room business, and he called it the Monterey Pool Room. He named it after my mother's birthplace,
mm-hmm.
The Monterey Pool Room, and he ran it, so he was a businessman. There's a little history book about Pontiac that indicates that my father was the first Mexican to own his own business in Pontiac. They spoke Spanish. At home, they spoke Spanish. We, growing up, when we went to school, we learned English. And so when we understood English,
mm-hmm.
but at home, we spoke Spanish. And my mother knew English, but she really never wanted to speak it.
Okay.
My father, because he was a businessman, had to learn both languages, but at home they spoke Spanish.
Okay.
We understood Spanish, but we spoke English. They understood English, but spoke in Spanish.
During that time that your father was there, I wonder, was he witness to any of the repatriation effects?
You know, growing up, I really didn't have an opportunity to... My father, most of his life, was the provider, was the worker. And I wish I had those opportunities to talk to my father about growing up and what it was like coming to Michigan. I can say this, that I never, when I was at home, never heard them complain about racism or about, their disliking where they lived. Or that this happened to that happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that my dad was a member of the Mutualistas, which was an association that provided services for Mexicans, the Mexican immigrant that came to Pontiac. I do know my father became a notary, and he notarized a number of papers for immigrants that came to Pontiac, and I guess people, applying for papers and him and my mother, they were poor, so they couldn't pay. The way they would pay was to to ask my mother and father to be padrinos to their child that was going to be baptized. So I know mama and papa had, you know, un montón de ahijados, you know. But that was from them. That was their way of being paid for sort of the notary work that my father did in the community. Okay.
Now, growing up in the home, you went to the Pontiac School District?
I went to a Catholic school, St. Frederick's High School, grade school and high school.
All right. Then what was the reading material in the home for your parents and then for you and your siblings?
Actually, there wasn't any reading material in our home. Reading material would be the newspaper, Life Magazine.
Okay.
Was one of the magazines that they subscribed to, Life Magazine. Maybe Woman's Day is what my mother would read.
And your father was a poet.
My father was a poet. And unbeknownst to me, after he died, my brother does gift me the little library, a shelf of libros en español de poesía that my father had. And by Pablo Neruda, by all the Mexican poets, Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz. So he did have a little collection of books of poets in Spanish, of the Mexican poets.
Okay, so that was his reading material then.
Right.
Yes. Now, of his poetry, how much of that inspired you?
I think my inspiration of my father is, I kind of say my father was a storyteller. Mm-hmm. And actually, after he dies, I realize the family never really convened for any family reunions. So I think I call him the convener of the family, because we used to get together for Thanksgiving and Christmas and birthdays and at the park. But after he died, we never did that again. So, you know, it's funny. You think it's the mom. You think it's mama that would have been the one that did that. But after my father died, the family never came together again.
Have they? Since then?
Well, my mother's death, at his death and my mother's death.
I see.
Yeah. But so I remember my father, the storyteller. Growing up, I really did not know him as the poet. I remember him reading poems and at cumpleaños, birthday celebrations, anniversaries, he would get up and have a poem to read. So I remember that. And that's kind of that part of my father, the storyteller.
Oh, how wonderful. I mean, there's a romance to that.
Yes.
Of our past that I think we miss a lot of that now today. And I guess other than social gatherings that we have with a few friends who have an appreciation for poetry and storytelling, there's very little opportunity or place to have that, is something I'd like to see come back.
Yeah. The TV, I think.
The TV?
Took its place, yeah.
Unfortunately. Because, as we know, there's very little on TV that any of us could really learn from.
Right.
Now, not your father then, what inspired you to begin writing? And how old were you?
I believe I was in my 40s, my late 40s, when I was studying in San Antonio, and I had an occasion to hear poets like Ricardo Sánchez, Evangelina Vigil, Ángela de Hoyos. And I was just so taken by that, hearing poetry for the first time, and in Spanish and in English, and seeing these individuals impact an audience. I mean, I remember Ricardo reading a poem about his baby that he lost, and he had the whole audience crying. And it was at a lecture hall at the St. Mary's University. And I thought, this is incredible. He had me crying. He moved me, you know. But I came away from those readings saying, I can do this. And so I think they were my primary inspiration to say, one day I'm going to do this. I'm going to be as good as they are.
And apparently you have become as good as they are, because I have read comments where you have visited either festivals or primarily schools and community centers, and the feedback that is documented is amazing, where you have changed people's lives. You have inspired young people to look again at the relationship between themselves and their parents, because your own relationship with your father seems to have been very, very strong and very loving. So I think that there's no question that Trinidad Sanchez Jr. is, you know, one of our better community known or better known community poets.
Thank you.
Now, in the content of your poetry, did your Michigan communities provide different inspirations than your communities in San Antonio or here in Colorado?
Oh, sure. I acknowledge the poets in San Antonio. I then returned to Michigan to live, and that's when I started writing. And so I looked for a community of poets that would support me, or that I could, you know, kind of go test my stuff out against and say, you know, am I doing the right thing? Is, you know, am I really a poet? And I know the first group I went to, somebody in the group said, well, why do you write in Spanish? You're in America, you know? So lucky for me, though, that same individual on the way out said, there's a group of poets that meet over by Wayne State University. He said, I think you'll like that group. So I went over there. Well, it was Horizons in Poetry. It was Ron Allen's group. They met monthly. And for the next 10 years, I don't think I ever missed a Horizons in Poetry meeting. And it was a black venue of black poets that gathered 30, 40 poets at Alexander's. Eventually, it moved a couple other places. Cops Corners. It started in Cops Corners, then moved to Alexander's. It was also the Latino Poets Association run by Jacqueline Sanchez in Detroit. And I still think she still runs that. And I sort of connected with them, and we did readings in the Latino community there. So those are two other strong groups that sort of I connect with, and that I always give acknowledgement to as being part of who I am and as a poet and a writer.
When you are writing, who is your audience? Or do you have an audience when you're in that creative process?
My audience, I think, well, is anybody that listens to me. You know, well, we'll get up, hey, on the bus, you can do it on the bus, there's your audience, you can do it, you know. I read to my wife, you know, she's my audience. But, más bien, I have two audiences. I have an English-speaking audience, and I have a Latino audience, a Mexicano audience. So when I say poems in Spanish, I have people that understand me. And sometimes people that don't understand me will come up and say, you know, I didn't understand that poem, but it sure sounded beautiful, man. How beautiful. It's like music, you know. And so those are the two audiences that I think that are out there. That I write for.
And in Chicano poetry, how much oral history is passed on in your poetry to, say, the Chicano community or the general community of the future? Not so much today, but do you see that as a form of oral history?
I would agree with that. I think if you look at Chicano writing, and I certainly identify myself as a Chicano writing, as a Chicano poet, and I think if you look at those stories that I'm telling, those poems that I write about, I try to include some history, something about us, you know, my own family, my own growing up, who I am. And if you look at that genre of Chicano poets, I think they do the same thing. And they'll write about their abuelitas. They write about crossing over the border. They write about, you know, their tia chencha. They're writing about family members. Mm-hmm. They're writing about their comida. You know, I love to write about jalapeno peppers and enchiladas, tacos, and tamales, you know. And what that says is, that's who I am. That's who I am. And so the poem I have, Who Am I? You know, I start out, am I the collection of pinto beans, the pile of warm tortillas? Years later, looking back, one day I was saying that poem, and that's Mama. You know, I was writing about Mama in the very first line of a poem called Who Am I? Sure, I am her, you know, collection of pinto beans and her pile of warm tortillas. That's what I grew up to be, you know.
In terms of artistic, social, and political expression, Chicano poetry of the 60s has been compared or equated to the corridos of the Mexican Revolution of the early 1900s. Do you agree with that statement or disagree with that?
I wouldn't disagree with it. I think that there's, sure, the corridos. You know, Maya Angelou says, if you love music, you love poetry. And I think growing up, you know, Mama played Pedro Infante, played Jorge Negrete. That was Mama's music, and I listened to that music. And so undoubtedly that's going to come out in my, you know, in my stories. It's in the music. I've had people tell me, oh, you got music. When you say your poems, you got music. Well, I think it's the music that I've listened to that I have inside of me, and it's going to come out. Going to come out in poems that I'm going to say. Yeah.
Okay, and then you have been at countless festivals and events and presentations where you have been featured, but also where there has been younger or more up-and-coming, let's say, Chicano and Latino artists. Of these up-and-coming poets, who do you enjoy hearing or reading?
Oh, wow. I always enjoy...
If you were to pick three, let's say.
Three. There's a woman in Houston, her name is Maria Palacios, and she's a new writer, and she's incapacitated. She's in a wheelchair, and she has some of the most beautiful poems about that, about her life and about being in, you know.
Her limitations.
She's a new voice. Jesse Herrera from Laredo, Texas, is a new voice. He's a very strong voice, like a Lalo. He de los echa como Lalo Delgado from here in Denver. And who else? Here in Denver, there's a name that I enjoy listening to is Willem Cano. He's half, I believe, Belgium. His mother was from Belgium, and his father was Chicano. Mm-hmm. But Willem Cano. He's a new voice.
Mm-hmm.
For me, he's those are up and coming poets. Yeah, but there are many more. There's many more. That's a hard question.
Right. I'm sure it is, especially given that poetry and poetry slams within the Latino community has seemed to just taken off.
Yes.
My favorite is a Michigan writer by the name of Ernesto Tad Mireles.
Oh, yes. There's another name. Sure. Ernesto. Oh, yeah.
Ernesto Tad
very
Mireles.
Powerful.
Yes, he is.
Very powerful.
In terms of the places that you have gone to speak at and to probably not necessarily inspire, but that's just a byproduct of your presentations. You have been in the prisons working with Chicano and Latino poets, is that correct?
Well, with Latinos and Chicanos.
Latinos.
I that work I did was sort of prior to my becoming an author and a poet.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
And then did you find that the way they wrote poetry, maybe in retrospect now, is something that... should be out within the general public or the Latino community in general?
It's sometimes I have done some classes now since I've been a writer. I have worked in the incarceration system. Not that much as a writer and a poet. Mm-hmm. Before I worked in sort of a social service advocacy position with Latino inmates. Because of the system and the way it is, many of the men keep their stories to themselves, only because that story can be used against them. So it's really difficult. I remember a friend of mine, Lolita Hernandez Gray from Detroit, who went in to do some, and she just explained to me how difficult it was to get them to a place where they were even feeling comfortable, where they might write about the situations that they were in. I'm sure, you know, I recently have a poem called America is a Prison that I recently sent to an inmate, and he was put in a hole for it. It was like, I don't know if they thought he wrote it or, but, you know, I found out later that he was, well, I think when you're in the system doesn't want you bad-mouthing the system. So prisoners will never really write. They'll write love poems. They'll write love poems to their lovers, their wives. You know, they'll say nice things, but they may write a little bit about freedom, but they're never really going to write and tell you what the prison system is like, because they'll be punished for it. So in some sense, the writing of prisoners is probably the truth of it won't happen until they're released or they're free and from the system.
A high school student comes to you and says, I have been assigned a class assignment to read a poem in class. Which of your poems would you recommend?
All of them. Yeah.
Which is your favorite? Do you have a favorite?
I have a lot of favorites. But let me tell you a little story. Can I do a poem for you?
I would love to have you do a poem for us.
A couple Christmases ago, a social worker from L.A., California, wrote me an email and said, I've been looking for you for 2 years. Are you Trinidad Sanchez Jr., the poet? So I wrote back and said, I said, yes, I am. You know, that's who you did get me. She said, I have a story to tell you. And then I never heard from her. So I wrote her back a month later and said, well, what's the story? So then she wrote me back and said, I'm a nurse in a clinic, and I do the intake. I'm from North or South Carolina, she said. But she wrote. And then she wrote that her mother had raised her that blacks and white people were equal, but that she could never bring one home, and she would never marry one. So now here she found herself in a clinic working with Puro Mexicanos. And she said, one thing I do that's not required of me at intake is I ask the children, can you sing a song or say a poem? And she said, this particular day, this Mexican woman came in with her 4-year-old son. And she asked him. And she said that he stood up. He put his hands behind his back, and he said, why am I so brown? By Trinidad Sanchez Jr. It's a question Chicanita sometimes ask while others wonder, why is the sky blue? Are the grass so green? Why am I so brown? God made you brown, meja, color bronce, color of your raza, your people, connecting you to your raíces, your roots, your story, historia, as you begin moving toward your future. God made you brown, mija, color bronce, beautiful, strong, reminding you of the goodness that tu mamá, that tus abuelas, your grandparents, y tus antepasados, your ancestors. God made you brown, mija, to wear as a crown, for you are royalty, a princess, la raza nueva, the people of the sun. It is the color of Chicana women, leaders, madres of Chicano warriors, luchando por la paz, y la dignidad de la justicia de la nación Aztlán. God wants you to understand that brown is not a color. Brown is not a color. It is a state of being, a very human texture, alive and full of song, dancing, celebrating to the new world, which is for everyone. Finally, Miha, God made you brown because it is one of her favorite colors. She ended the story by saying that when he missed a couple lines, the mother fed him the lines. So the mother also knew the poem. And that's just the... I think that's the poem, one of the poems that I'm known for. And a couple of people have told me it should be our national anthem. But that's a nice compliment. But I suppose that would be my favorite poem, if you pin me to the wall.
Well, I not meaning to pin you to the wall, but in Michigan, in Lansing in particular, there was a group of us who got together. And I can't recall, quite frankly, which one of the people from this group had said that "Why Am I So Brown" should be the new "Yo Soy Joaquin."
It's a compliment. Thank you.
Okay. You have been featured again at poetry festivals, right, and events over the years. Is there one in the near future that you will be at?
I'm hoping to... What's coming up? I've been invited to a Floricanto festival in that Jose Montoya is organizing out in, not San Francisco, but what's near there?
San Jose?
San Jose, I think. In San Jose. That's going to be in April of next year, 2004. And there are other poets that are coming from around the country for that Floricanto Festival, so I'm looking forward to that one.
What exactly is a Floricanto? Can you explain to us?
Well, there's been a, sort of a gathering. It was a Chicano gathering of poets, and I guess taken from earlier in the Nahuatl, Aztec, culture. They did a Floricanto celebration of flowers and song, and that's where that name comes from, I believe, Floricanto. And it's been, there were a number of them. As I was writing, I sort of caught the tail end of the movimiento, and I did was able to participate in a number of Floricanto festivals in San Antonio, Albuquerque, Austin. And there was another one in Houston. I didn't go to that one, but they were just three-day gatherings of the arts of Chicano poetry, music, and corridos, and poesía.
Is that similar to a poetry slam?
More of a festival. I think the slam is new. The slam is new, and it comes out of Chicago. Mark Smith began the slam. It was a competition. More, I don't think the Floricanto Festival is. It's a celebration more than a competition. And a slam is a competition.
The content of poetry around the 60s and 70s had to do with the farm workers, with love, with the educational crises that we seem to be in. What's the content today among young Chicanos?
I think it's still the same. You have, and what comes to mind immediately is there's three poems, one by Tino Villanueva. It's about the immigrant experience. There's a poem by Jesse, in Detroit. There's a wonderful poem that he has. It's about the immigrant experience. And then I just recently wrote a poem that I dedicated called To Be or Not to Be for Tamtam Credo, who was a representative official who was against immigrants here in Denver.
May we hear that?
Well, I
No? Okay.
You can hear it.
If you want, we can edit it out afterwards.
Well, no. If you hand me my bag over there, I'll get it. I don't have this one memorized. That's the. But I do have it with me.
A black beret has become your signature look. Is there a reason for the black beret?
Only because a sombrero is a little tricky to wear.
Okay.
No, not really. I don't know. Somebody gave it to me, and I started. My brother, I think, gave it to me, and I started wearing a beret. And then it just kind of became a trademark.
Have you had publishing or in getting your, on your way to getting published, were there problems that you encountered from mainstream presses?
Oh, sure. I think today still there is racism in the literary publishing community, and it's very, it's very difficult. I recently was explaining that to somebody, to another Chicano here in Denver. He said, oh, yeah, I know what you mean. He said, I'm on the Internet. He said, and I'm sort of do these contests on the Internet. And he said, I was using my name, a Latino name, you know. He said, then I changed it to Ant-Man. He said, the minute I changed it to Ant-Man, he said, I won first prize. You know, like.
Do you think any of that is because of content, or is it because of who's writing it?
Are
they the same?
Well, I think, you know, what happens in the publishing world is the publishers have, you know, focused on two or three writers. And then they say, you know, well, we publish this person, so we don't need to publish anymore. You know, and they give them a little, you know.
They pat themselves.
Pat them on the back and, you know.
You're talking about Latino writers.
Latino writers.
Yes.
Right? And they give awards, you know. They'll give, you know, $10,000, $100,000 to somebody. Instead of giving, you know, $10,000 to 100 poets and getting us all published and put out there, see, they put all their money and all their eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we published our Latino poet.
Right.
You know, so you can't criticize us anymore. And when there's so many of us out there, and the ones coming after me, you know, they're having trouble getting published. And that publishers will, poetry doesn't sell. Poetry doesn't sell, see. Well, they're not interested in publishing good literature or literature. They're interested in making money. And that's what it comes down to, you know. So, and it's always that battle. I think it's always going to be that battle. Here we go. To be or not to be, for Sam Tancredo. I want you to know I am illegal, that my parents were illegal, that they came to this country with a Mexican dream, that life would be better, there would be an abundance of justicia. They raised 10 illegal children who fought and returned from those unlawful wars only to be more illegal than when they left. If that's not enough, I want you to know my siblings have multiplied, and all my sobrinos y sobrinas, they are all illegal. I want you to know I am illegal, that we're the ones who renovated your home, raised your children, clean up after people like you, made your houses, garden your flowers, work your fields, your orchards, construction sites, restaurant kitchens, doing the cheap hard labor your kind refused to do. I want you to know I am illegal. We are all illegal Americans from North, Central, and South America, and we are proud of being illegal Americans. I want to know, with a name like yours, if there's skeletons in your closet, if they are illegal, and did you ask for their pink cards? After all, people who live in glass houses need to be extra careful. Tom Tancredo, I am illegal. I'm proud of being illegal. And your Gestapo immigration camp, fuck with my Mexicano Chicano sueño for a better life lleno de justicia, not the just us American dream that you look for. A life without people who are different than you in color and size and even better than you. I want you to know that there are no illegal people. There are only illegal government. I'm sure you will say writing this poem is illegal. It's against the law because it's the fashionable thing to be. I want you to know you will never understand. Being illegal is fun. Being a wetback is cool. Being a mojado is in la moda. Because being illegal is being different than you. And it's the best thing. I know how to be.
That's Trinidad Sanchez Jr. We thank you very much for being with us.
Gracias, Diana. Buena suerte.
Gracias.